Marriage Today presents The Secret of Lifelong Love by Jimmy Evans.
In this session, I want to talk to you about a dynamic that's very common in relationships. It's a sprint mentality versus a marathon mentality. When we get married, when we meet each other, we typically are in a sprint mode rather than a marathon mode. Marriage is a marathon. My mom and dad married for 61 years. You can't sprint that long. 70 pounds ago and 50 years ago, I used to run track. And so, you know, when I ran track, I mean, the sprinters, you could go quick for a short distance, but the marathoners had a completely different mentality. And so many people today get married in a sprint. And what they find is that everything's passionate, everything's wonderful, everything's incredible right before it crashes. But the marathon mentality says, it's not what we can make happen, it's what we can keep happening. What can we keep happening for 61 years? What can we keep happening for the rest of our lives, rather than what can we make happen for a few months or a few years, you know, while we're falling in love and while we're securing the relationship or something like that, and then the thing falls apart. Marriage is like two rivers that come together. When you're dating, you're like parallel rivers. You're adjoining each other, you're examining each other, you think you know each other, but when you get married, it's like two rivers that come together, and there's the immediate crashing, you know, just the personalities, the different people, the different, you know, desires, whatever you want to say, personas that come together, and there's a lot of turbulence, there's a lot going on. But what happens is the longer you're married, God's way, in the marathon mentality, the more you become one, the more it becomes peaceful, it becomes joyful. You can make it in marriage. It's not luck, it's not fate. Every person can succeed in marriage if we just do the right things, and they're really not complicated. And so I'm going to talk about four questions to qualify how long your love will last. Four questions. And it's the answer to these questions. I'm not talking about the verbal answer. I'm talking about the real answer. The way that we respond to these four issues, this is going to determine how long your love lasts. In other words, are you in a sprint that's going to end it badly? Or are you in a marathon that year after year after year, your marriage just gets better and better and better as it goes along? And I'm saying you absolutely can have a marriage that gets better and better and better, and you can have a marriage that lasts for the rest of your life. You've got to get out of the sprint mentality, and you've got to get out of the fear mentality. When you're operating in fear, it will make your fears come true. But when you're operating in faith, it will make your dreams come true. And so a lot of people, when Karen and I married, we were full of fear, and we had a sprint mentality. And so we almost divorced. I mean, it was by the grace of God that we made it. But here are the four questions to help us understand, you know, the marathon mentality, and how to help us understand just the basic foundations in our relationship to make our love last. And the first question is, what is the source of your love? Now, this is a very, very important question. When you say you love someone, what is the source of that? Now, again, most of us have never thought about this, but I want you to think about it. And when you ask a person that's in love, they're married, they're in love, what fuels your passion for your marriage? What fuels your love for your spouse? The typical answers are passion, chemistry. We just have great chemistry. We're soulmates. That's kind of a big phrase today. Sexual attraction. We're best friends. We enjoy being together, you know, all the above or whatever. And so those are the answers. But life happens. Conflict, children, finances, job stress, hurts from our past, temptation and sins, mistakes, failures, hurtful words, taxes, bills, illness, in-laws, the devil, the world, all of that happens to us and it drains our batteries. I mean, all of that's going to happen. Again, the marathon mentality says we have got to run this race in such a way is that we can endure whatever's coming. Sprinters don't think like that. The sprinters have a completely different mentality. And a lot of people who fail in marriage, they're sprinters who don't have a resource deep enough, a lasting resource to fuel their love long term. Karen and I didn't. When we got married, I mean, you know, we got married with the best of intentions, but one day I woke up and I was out of love. I didn't love Karen anymore. And I just, If someone said, do you love your wife? Say, I wouldn't have said it probably. I would have pretended. But I didn't love Karen anymore. I thought I'd made a mistake. She was the enemy. Karen was my enemy. And here was the thought in my mind. If she would change, our marriage would be healed. If she would change, our marriage would be so much better and our marriage would be healed. And a lot of people, a lot of you watching right now, you know, wherever you're watching, is you have that thought in your mind. I can just tell you, I was wrong. I had a sprinter's mentality. I had a fear-based mentality. I was deceived. And I absolutely believed that I had married the wrong woman, I had made a mistake, and now I was stuck in a bad marriage. And so let me tell you the two wrong sources of love. And these are the two most common sources of love. So I'm asking you, what is your source of love? If you're going to make it in marriage, if you're going to make it for the next 61 years, like my mom and dad, you're going to make it for another 40 or 50 years. Okay. What is your source of love? Here's the most common source of love for people who get married. My spouse. My spouse is my source of love. You make me feel good. I like the way that I feel when I'm around you. So Karen was my source of love, and what that means is I can't love you more than you're loving me. Now, I tell the story about when I played golf. I golfed all the time, I worked all the time, and it almost ruined our marriage. And the night that our marriage was healed, you know, I gave up golf. But let me tell you about why I played golf. Let me tell you about just my emotional disposition at that time. I got saved a week before we got married, so I was a Christian. But I didn't know how to trust in God. I didn't know that. So Karen was my source of love. I wanted Karen to meet my needs. And so when we got married, she couldn't. Because only God can meet your deepest needs. See, people can't meet your deepest needs. Only God can. And when you don't trust God to meet your deepest needs, you automatically transfer the expectation of that on your spouse, and your marriage is set up for failure. It's a codependent relationship. In other words, your source is just simply the wrong source. It's not God, it's your spouse. So my source was Karen. Well, I need acceptance. That's one of the things I need. You know, I need identity to feel like I'm somebody. I mean, I have all those needs, but here's the way Karen made me feel. She made me feel rejected. Because love is our greatest need, rejection is our greatest wound and our greatest fear. My greatest need is love, true love. And my greatest rejection, or my greatest fear then, it's true for everyone. Well, so we were married, and I remember walking through the house, and I would say or do something, and what I was trying to do is to get a certain response from Karen. A smile, a look, you know, her to jump on top of me and, you know, passionately kiss me or whatever I was looking for. Well, it didn't happen. And it made me feel rejected. Now, I'm not the kind, most men are not this way, I'm not the kind of a person that when I feel rejected, I say, I feel so rejected. My feelings are just so hurt. Karen, you just devastated me. You know, I didn't do that. When I get hurt, this is what I do. I set my jaw. I always tell them I'm getting upset because my jaw goes out. So I do. So Karen, I would be walking through the house and I would say, hey Karen, how are you? And she'd kind of, you know, ignore me or walk off. She wasn't being bad. There's nothing wrong with her. And I would think to myself, she doesn't think I'm attractive. She didn't like me. I don't know what I did, but and I felt rejected. And I'd go get my golf clubs and go golfing. Because on the golf course, I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel that way with my friends. But when I came home, I was so raw with the feeling of rejection. Okay. Well, so Karen was my source. She made me, there's nothing wrong with her, but because she became my source, I could only love her as much as she was loving me. I felt disappointment. I felt frustration. She got pregnant. Life happened. Job stress, all the kind of things that began to happen that puts pressure on both of you regardless of how hard you're trying. And so finally, you know, I just turned my heart away from her. This is what I did. Because she was my source, I turned my heart away from her, and then I became angry and verbally hostile toward her. I punished her. My way of trying to change her was very ungodly, as I began to be verbally aggressive toward her and beat her down verbally, and that led us to the brink of divorce. the night that we almost separated. Then there's me, there's Jimmy, and me being the source of my love. Now, I want to say something to you about your spouse and God. I want you to listen to what I'm about to say, because this is a profound point. God made you in your mother's womb. God made your spouse in their mother's womb. And there's only one person who perfectly loves your spouse, and that's God. I do not perfectly love Karen Evans. I love her as much as I can, but I don't perfectly love her. But God loves her perfectly, permanently, and powerfully. My God is constantly in love with my wife, and he loves her perfectly for who she is because he made her in her mother's womb. He loves her permanently, and he'll never change his mind about his love for her, regardless of how mad I am. I've tried to get God to be mad at Karen. You know, I've tried to sick God on Karen many times. You know, he won't do that. And he loves her powerfully, which means 1 Corinthians 13 says love never fails. God's love is not human love. God's love can solve any problem. God's love is supernaturally powerful to do what a human can never do. So I've got, if I'm my source, Galatians chapter 5 says this, the deeds of the flesh, Paul says there's only two sources of love, your flesh or the spirit. And the apostle Paul says, if you walk in your flesh, here's what's gonna happen, jealousy, envy, divisions, factions, outbursts of anger, immorality, all those things. In other words, that's what you can produce out of you. But the fruit of the Spirit, listen, the fruit of the Spirit is love. That's God's perfect love. Joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, long-suffering, self-control. Those are all, that's the person that I want to be married to. That's the person that my spouse wants to be married to, and it's free. So listen to me. So what is your source of love? Okay. What is your source of love? It cannot be my spouse. If they're the best person on the planet, they cannot be my source of love. I hope you feel passion. I hope you have good chemistry. I hope you're sexually attracted to each other. I hope you're soulmates and all that. It's not enough. It cannot, it's enough for a sprint. If you want to go be on Oprah and jump on her couch, go for it. It's enough for a sprint. We're sexually attracted. We just love each other. We're soulmates. Go, have your sprint, and then you'll fall down exhausted and your love will be over. If your source is a person, you'll fail. I promise you will fail. I promise you'll get your heart broken. I promise you'll be devastated by marriage. If you trust in yourself, you think too highly of yourself. I just can't do it. I cannot love with that kind of love. Well, what's the answer? God. The only source that can fuel a lifetime of love is the person who perfectly, permanently, and powerfully loves my wife and myself. So when I wake up in the morning, here's what I do. This is Karen and me. When I woke up this morning, this is what I did. When she woke up this morning, this is what she did. And we do it every day. This is our marriage. I sit before the Lord, and when I pray, and here's what I say, God, I can't love Karen today. I can't love Karen today without you. I can't. And I know life is gonna happen. I know that we're gonna have conversations, issues. I'm gonna walk through the house and I'm gonna want her to smile at me and tell me what a hunk I am and jump on top of me, and it's not gonna happen. And when that happens, I need the grace not to call her something bad. I need the grace not to take it personally. I always took it so personally. And Karen was just walking through the house thinking about 1,000 things, and she'd give me a look. Well, she was stressed out about all the things she had to do, but I took that personally. Lord, I need you to fill me with your love, with your joy, with your peace, with your patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I need your strength inside of me today with Karen and every other person that I come in contact with I don't trust myself and I can't depend on people. Listen to what I just said. I don't trust myself and I can't depend on people. When I began to turn to God and trust in Him, and what I mean by that is it has to be a relationship. It has to be real. When I say depending on God, I'm not talking about an ethereal thing or just saying it. I'm talking about when you're hurt, when you're mad, when you're empty, when you're frustrated, when you feel lonely, when all those things, you turn to God. You don't turn on your spouse. You don't turn to something else. You turn to God and you trust Him with that need in your life. Well, I turned to God. When my life changed, when my marriage changed, I turned to God. Let me say, our four deepest needs are acceptance, identity, security, and purpose. And acceptance means to be really loved constantly, perfectly, for who I really am and not to have to perform for it. I don't want to have to perform for it. Okay. When I began to experience God's love, I no longer felt rejected when Karen didn't give me the response I needed. And this was the most dramatic change that I saw in our relationship. I would be walking, it's true today, it's true in our relationship today, because Karen's a wonderful wife, but she's a person, just like me, I'm a human being. And when Karen responds to me in a certain way, and this began to happen, as soon as I began to turn to God, and I released Karen from the expectation of being my source. And I didn't trust myself anymore because I saw what I was capable of. The meanness and the pettiness that I was capable of. And when I began to turn to God, I remember the first time that Karen made a response to me that before would have made me feel rejected. And she made this response toward me. And I remember thinking, she's having a bad day, but there's nothing wrong with me. It felt so good. Because you know what my response was? To go help her. Rather than getting my feelings hurt and set my jaw, like, I'll get you back. I don't care what you cook tonight, it's not good. And I can't wait to tell you. Is this any good? Yeah. Now, next time you ask me if you look fat in that, you're gonna get it, sister. I go, well, I don't know. Yeah. It feels so good not to depend on people. It feels so good. It feels so good to be able to love a person who's not loving you with God's love. When I'm mad at Karen, when I'm upset at Karen, and I go pray, God never takes my side. And I've tried to get Him to do it many times. You know, I'm just, God, strike her. Remember the Bible. You know, just you struck people in the Bible. Strike her. But when I go and pray, you know what God does? He fills me with His love for her, because His love is perfect, permanent, and powerful. He'll never take an offense against her. He'll never reject her. He'll never stop believing in her. Ever. So if I try to get her to meet that need, if I try to meet my need myself, I've seen what I can do. But every time I turn to God, He fills me with a supernatural, perfect love for Karen. And we've been married 40 years, and I love that sister. And I'm going to be married to her for the rest of my life because of God. You can clap. Go ahead. And I know good and well that a lot of you have had your heart broken, and like me. You've had your heart broken. You've been through difficult relationship after difficult relationship. And for some of you, as I'm sitting here talking, there's a light bulb that came on and said, I've just been trusting in people. I've been trusting in myself. I haven't been trusting in God. It's the number one question. Will your love last for a lifetime? If God is your source, absolutely. Second question, will you serve each other? Will you serve each other? Big question, okay? Will you serve each other? Well, I grew up in chauvinism, and again, that's part of my testimony. And my concept of marriage was to get a good woman who would serve me. But I thought you know, if you're successfully married, you found someone to serve you, especially men, because men are better than women. You know, that's what I thought. And I'd never thought at that point in time that I would be a marriage counselor. I wanted to be the wife whisperer. Now, you've heard of the horse whisperer and the dog whisperer and all that. See, I wanted men all over America to call me and say, Jimmy, my wife is rebellious. And I would say to them, the wife whisperer is on his way. The problem was I couldn't get her trained. And so I knew I had to train my own wife before I could become the wife whisperer. But honestly and truly, the concept of serving Karen was the furthest thing from my mind when I got married. I mean, it was a shock to me that she would even expect me to do anything. Now, I want you to listen to me. In John 13, Jesus was sitting at the Last Supper. He was about to be crucified in a few hours. Okay. He was sitting at the table with the disciples at the Last Supper. Anybody know what the disciples were talking about at the Last Supper? Which of them was the greatest? Jesus was in his last hours, his last event with them before his death, and they're all sitting at the table talking about which one's the greatest. And Jesus got up from the table, took off his outer garment, girded himself, and began to wash their feet, and it was detestable to them. And here's what Jesus said. The servant is the greatest of all. You don't lord over each other like the unbelievers, but the servant is the greatest of all. Did you know the greatest business is always the business that serves people the most? The most successful businesses are always those that serve people in the best way. When Jesus said the servant is the greatest of all, that's exactly what he meant. The greatest marriage is two servants in love. And so constantly serving each other is the secret of a great marriage. But when many people are dating, basically they're looking for someone to serve them. They're looking for a person. It's a tryout to see how good you are at serving me. And what happens in dating is we do serve each other. We're very aggressive at serving each other. So we're under the mindset that says this is just going to continue into marriage. And a lot of times we're in for a harsh reality. Here's why serving each other is so important. I want you to listen to what I'm saying now. The first is equality. The person who doesn't serve in a marriage is typically trying to dominate the relationship, or they're checked out emotionally. When Karen and I got married, I was dominant, and I wanted Karen to serve me. I did not serve my wife, and I was dominant in the relationship. Men and women are absolutely equal, and if your marriage is going to work, you're going to have to serve your spouse. And serving shows your spouse, I'm not better than you. Number two is humility. We're naturally prideful. All of us have pride issues in our lives, men and women. This is universal. Karen wants me to do something. She wants me to change the light bulb. She wants me to get the groceries out of the car. She wants me to fold the clothes. You know, she'll just walk by the dryer and say, there's a load of clothes in there. Would you mind folding them? You know, and I just want to say, you're talking to an anointed man of God here. Excuse me. I spend every day fighting evil. You know, I mean, these hands were made to pray for the sick, not to fold clothes. And, excuse me? And she'll just walk by and say, would you fold those clothes? I fold clothes. I vacuum. I wash dishes. I don't cook for health and safety reasons. I've learned not to do that. The neighbors asked me not to. But I serve my wife. I have an office at home, and it's above our garage, and Karen will be coming down the street with groceries, and she'll call me and say, I'm about to pull in the garage. Show up. And she'll pull in the garage, and I'll go down and haul stuff in. Toting and fetching is one of the things I am so good at. That's what I do all day long. And when Karen wants me to do something, I do it with a good attitude because I'm there to serve her. I'm a servant, and I'm there to serve my wife. And so it keeps me humble. I'm not too good for that, and I'm not better than she is. She is equal with me, I'm equal with her, and God has called me to serve my wife. And let me just say, after 40 years, we have a great marriage. We serve each other. I am married to someone who I know will serve me for the rest of her life, and I'll serve her the rest of my life. What a great marriage. But when a person will not serve, they're either dominating the relationship or they think they're too good for it. And let me say this. One of the worst marriages I've ever seen was a wealthy couple, and everything they wanted done, they hired, and they wouldn't do for each other. Doesn't matter how wealthy you are. It doesn't matter how many people you have helping you. You need to serve each other from the time you wake up till the time you go to bed. It's about helping each other. It's about being a part of each other's lives. The third reason that we serve is intimacy. Jesus said in Matthew 6, wherever your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The meaning of that is wherever you're investing yourself, that's where your passion will be. If you're only investing yourself in work or the children or something else, your passion is going to be there. But because I'm constantly investing in Karen, it means I keep being passionate. There's no trick to this. Wherever you're investing yourself, your passion is going to be there. Jesus said, you can't separate it. You can't give your treasure over here and have your passion over here. So if you're serving kids all day long, if you're serving other people all day long, if you're serving yourself all day long and you're not serving your spouse, the passion is going to fizzle. When we used to do the yard, we used to mow the yard, Karen mowed, which I loved. It was great for her figure. And Karen mowed and I edged and cleaned up. And so Karen would get out with the mower and she was a great mower and she would mow. And I'd come behind her and I would edge the yard and clean up and do all that kind of stuff. But we did it together. And there's just something about doing it together. One person's washing the dishes, next person's drying the dishes. One person's sweeping, the other person's, you know, cleaning it up or whatever. It's about sharing. And intimacy in marriage, you know, there's so much pie in the sky stuff about intimacy. It happens when you're doing life together. And Karen and I we do life together. We love being together. We love serving each other. Intimacy. And the last thing is this: destiny. You'll never reach your destiny. God looked at Adam by himself in Genesis 2:18 and he said it's not good for him to be alone. He needs a helper. He needs someone to serve. And of course, in Ephesians 5, men are told that we nourish and cherish our wives and lay down our lives for them. And so Karen cannot achieve her destiny without me. She can't. She can't do it. And I'm saying, if God called her to be single, obviously God can do anything. But he put me in her life to serve her, to get to her destiny. I can't get to my destiny without Karen serving me. That's why God said it wasn't good for a man to be alone. Every good thing happens in marriage when you're serving each other. Equality, humility, intimacy, destiny. But some people have stinking thinking. They have toxic thoughts in their minds that keep them from serving like this. But man, I work all day and when I get home, I should be served. That was me. That's a chauvinistic way of thinking. No, you went and made money all day long. Now when you come home, you have another set of responsibilities. Part of which is to serve your family and to serve your wife. You're not off when you get home. You're a husband now. You were something else when you were at work. A woman sometimes, I work all day, I serve the kids in the house. You serve me and the kids, and while you're at it, serve yourself. I'm too tired to serve you. Okay, well, let me say this. If a husband's not helping her, you're putting a tremendous strain on her. But part of what a husband does when he gets home is to say, let me help with the kids, let me help with dinner, let me clean up afterwards and give you a break so that you have energy to serve me. But there's no excuse not to serve your spouse, regardless of how hard you work or how many kids you have. Number three, I served you while we were dating, now we're married. Married people don't do that. People with bad marriages don't do that. But God said, for this cause a man will leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife. And that word cleave means to pursue energetically, and it was addressed to men. That was addressed to men. Men are supposed to be the leaders in this area to serve their wives. Married people, successful people do that in marriage. It's the people with terrible marriages that were in the sprint mentality that don't serve each other. Here's a good one. It says, as soon as you serve me, I'll serve you. I don't want to be the first because you'll wear me out. That's what I thought about Karen. I thought if I ever show her an ounce of humility and start serving her, she's going to wear me out. I know the sister's been building a list for 10 years and she's just waiting for that list. But I'll tell you what happened is, see, I like what Joyce Meyer says. The best person does the right thing first. If you're the weaker person, you'll wait for your spouse to go first. If you're the stronger person, you'll do it first. And Karen did it first because I was not the best person. She was. And so I'll serve you as soon as you start serving me. How about this? I'm going to serve you and believe God that as I began to love you and meet your needs, God is going to move in our marriage. And God's going to bless us as a result. Rather than two stubborn, prideful people refusing. This was me now. It wasn't Karen, but it was me. to stubborn, prideful people refusing to do the right thing. And here's another one, and that is Bob doesn't serve his wife and they have a great marriage. You know, I know what Jimmy Evans says, but I'll just tell you, Bob has got a terrific marriage. Every day at work, he tells me how terrific his marriage is. He goes home, his wife waits on him hand and foot, and that's of Jesus. And I want you to go see Bob's marriage counselor. He wants to talk to you. Stop listening to Jimmy Evans. No, just because Bob's wife serves him and Bob doesn't serve her does not mean they have a good marriage. It just means they're willing to live in mediocrity. And his wife is frustrated, her needs are not met, and you can't convince me they're happy. Don't look at other people. Don't look at other people and justify something that you may be doing. The second question is, will you serve each other? Will you be humble? Will you work at the relationship? Will you, you know, believe God that as you do that, the intimacy in your marriage is going to grow as you begin to serve? Jesus said the servant is the greatest of all. All great marriages have a servant spirit. Number three, these last two are quick. How will you handle negative emotions in difficult situations? How are you going to handle difficulty when it comes, negative emotions? Let me talk about the garden of your love. When you're in the dating phase of marriage, you're planting. When you're in the newly married phase of marriage, you're planting a garden. Beautiful things. All the flowers and the plants that you're planting, they're beautiful things that are wonderful to have, okay? In a marathon, you have to tend those things. In a sprint, you don't. In a sprint, you're just planting flowers and all that, and you just think they're always going to look like that. But any mature person knows that if you don't tend something, it always decays. Things never get better when they're not tended. You have to tend the garden of your love. And regardless of how much in love you are, there will be weeds and bugs every day. If you go out to your garden every day, you're going to have weeds and bugs. Let me tell you the secret to a great garden. Pull the weeds every day and kill the bugs every day. Every day. And when you do it every day, it's not hard. There's a few of them there. You pick them and you go on. But when you don't do it for a long time, the garden will be destroyed. Karen and I fell in love, and we were both planting words and things in each other that we absolutely loved. And we planted this beautiful garden, and we couldn't wait to have that garden together. But we didn't know how to deal with weeds and bugs. And so we didn't. Every couple is going to have problems in marriage that they have to deal with, and the way you deal with those makes all the difference in how your marriage is going to be. So let me give you four questions and four keys. I'm just going to read through these very quickly. Because the four questions are, this is going to determine now if the garden of your love is going to thrive or if it's going to die. Okay. And by the way, if it's completely dead, it can be resurrected, because Karen and I's garden was completely dead. And as we began to deal with weeds and bugs and began to pursue each other and serve each other, our garden was resurrected, and it's been phenomenal ever since. And so if you've lost a lot of the passion in your marriage, you can get it back. Four questions. Are you going to trust God or your feelings? People who follow their feelings lead a painful life. Okay. Trust God. Are you going to face your problems or ignore them? Because when you ignore problems, they don't go away, they accumulate. Are you going to ignore the weeds? Are you going to ignore the bugs and just hope they go away? Or are you going to face them and deal with them? I'm talking about you as a couple. Number three, are you going to take responsibility for your issues or blame your spouse? And it's this mentality that says it's all their fault, and if they changed, everything would be all right. Well, let's just say this. Let's just say 75% of it is their problem, but 25% of it's your problem. Are you going to change your 25%, or are you going to point the finger at them for their 75%? You might be surprised what happens to your marriage when you begin to take responsibility for that 25% and stop focusing on them. And number four, is you going to fight for your marriage or turn your heart away? Are you going to turn your heart away from your spouse? Hebrews 13:5, God says, I'll never leave you or forsake you. And forsake means turn your heart away. God says, I'll never turn my heart away. On the worst day of our relationship, I won't turn my heart away. All affairs, all divorce, all bad things happen on the day that you turn your heart away from your marriage. And you decide, I'm going to go to work, I'm going to have an affair, I'm going to put my green zip-up jumpsuit on and go in the garage and build something for 30 years. But I'm checking out. I'm checking out. I'm going to fight for my marriage, and regardless of how bad things get, I'm not turning my heart away from my spouse. So you're going to trust God or your emotions? Trust God. You're going to face it or ignore it? I'm going to face it. You're going to take responsibility or blame? I'm going to take responsibility. And are you going to fight for your marriage or turn your heart away? I'm going to fight for my marriage. Okay. What are you going to do? What are you going to do when the garden of your love, when you notice that there are things to deal with? Okay. Those are the questions. Here are the keys. Number one, let your spouse be honest and be honest yourself. Build an atmosphere of honesty that says, honey, we want to have a great marriage and I want to be a good husband. I want to be a good wife. If there's anything wrong, you can say whatever you want to say and you won't pay a price for it. You can be absolutely honest. We want that kind of a marriage. We want that kind of a relationship. Just have an honest, don't be defensive. Don't be insecure. Because again, the problems don't go away. They just accumulate. And I need Karen to tell me when things are wrong so we can deal with it. Maybe she's right. Maybe she's not. The second is don't deny your feelings, but don't trust them either. Just, my feelings are my feelings. Doesn't mean they're right. Don't deny your feelings. If I'm hurt, if I'm angry, but when I'm confronting Karen, I don't say to her this and this and this and this. I just say, here's how I'm feeling. I feel angry, I feel upset, I feel jealous, I feel whatever. I'm not saying my feelings are right. And see, she doesn't feel attacked because I'm not attacking her. I'm just telling her how I feel. It may be right, it may be wrong, it may be something in between. But I can be honest, and then I just tell her how I'm feeling. I don't let my feelings dictate to me, but I listen to them. And I know if they're bad enough, we need to talk about it. The third thing is make the devil your enemy, not your spouse. The devil hates your marriage. He's always wanting to divide your relationship. And Ephesians 4 says, be angry, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your wrath, nor give place to the devil. If you have gone to bed on anger in your marriage, the devil has visited with you about your spouse and you've got wrong thoughts about them. I thought I made a mistake. I thought Karen was the enemy and I had no concept that if I went to bed on anger, the devil would use that to tell me about my wife. Listen, God loves Karen perfectly, permanently, and powerfully. Satan hates Karen perfectly, permanently, and powerfully. Am I going to listen to God or the devil? And it says here, if you go to bed on anger, if you don't deal with the garden of your love today and you go to bed on anger, the devil is going to, he's not going to let you know it's him. He's just going to begin to feed thoughts into your mind about your spouse. They're the enemy. And the day, one of the greatest days in our relationship is the day that I woke up and realized Karen's not my enemy, the devil's my enemy. And if we go to bed on anger, I'm inviting him to come in and to change the way I think about my wife. And I stood up one day and said, that's the most beautiful, perfect person I've ever met in my life. I'm deeply in love with her, and devil, get out of our marriage. I'm tired of you coming in and telling me there's something wrong with her. And the fourth key is get help and accountability if you can't work through your problems quickly. If you've got a chronic situation that's too big for you, go get help. That's wisdom. It's not weakness, it's wisdom. Everybody needs help in their marriage. Go to a pastor, a leader, a godly friend, go get help. It's the best thing that you can possibly do. But here's my question for you. I've only got one more question. Here's my question for you. What are you gonna do when the garden of your love has weeds and bugs? What are you gonna do? Trust God. Take responsibility. Face your issues. Don't turn away from your marriage. Let your spouse be honest. Develop this atmosphere of honesty. Talk about your feelings. Just don't let your feelings dictate the relationship, so on and so forth. I'm saying you can have a marriage that lasts for a lifetime and be fantastic, but you're going to have to tend that garden. There's nothing wrong with you if you have weeds and bugs. And if the garden of your love is dead, hey, just begin to deal with the big weeds and the big bugs first. And you'll be surprised how quickly you'll fall back in love and enjoy the passion that you once had in your relationship. Number four, this is my fourth question, I'm done. Who are your friends? Who are your friends? 1 Corinthians 15:33, don't be deceived. Evil company corrupts good morals. When you're going through tough times, you want people that will stand with you and encourage you to do the right thing. Bad friends are like swimming upstream. It's a constant bad, even if you're fighting against it, it's a constant influence, and finally in a weak moment, you go their way. That's what bad friends are like, and I had a whole bunch of them when I was growing up. Good friends are like going upstream in a canoe, because life is upstream. There's pressures and there's challenges. But it's not swimming upstream, it's canoeing upstream with friends in the back paddling with you. And when you're tired, you got people to help you paddle. And when you're worn out and confused and discouraged, you have people telling you good things, saying, you can make it, don't give up. It's all upstream, but you're fighting upstream. You can make it for the rest of your life. You can stay in love for the rest of your life. Just these four simple things are so profound in giving us a foundation for a lifelong love affair.
This concludes session one. Please continue with Married on Purpose, the next teaching in this series.